When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Mark from Guitar Nerds here, bringing you an extra podcast and something a little bit special. This week, Jay and I got the chance to chat with radio presenter Ian Lee about his new show on Talk Radio, his diverse musical tastes, and his obsession with the Monkees. Now, this interview is definitely a bit different from the sort of things that we usually do, but it's a really interesting chat, and Ian has got some great stories. Plus, we do eventually get around to chatting about his Epiphone Casino, how he owns a monkey signature Gretsch, and why he thinks that Rickenbacker basses are sexy. If you like what you hear, do check out ianlee.com and tune into his radio show from 10 till 1 in the evenings, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio.
It's a late night phone-in show on Talk Radio, weeknights from 10. You can listen on DAB or talkradio.co.uk. And it's a phone-in show, but it's not the usual kind of stuff that you get on late night radio. It's not talking about immigrants and Syria. You know, it's we just mess around generally and talk nonsense. And one of the joys of it is I'm allowed to have any guests that I can get my hands on. I can get anyone, you know, who will say yes. And as a direct result, we've had some, you know, proper musical heroes of mine on there. We've had Roger McGuinn from The Byrds, and we've had Mike Love from The Beach Boys, you know, I've been after for years, and John Sebastian from The Loving Spoonful. Can you tell I love 60s music? and the weird thing is, for most of these people, Roger McGuinn and John Sebastian in particular, A lot of these 60s and 70s singers, they run their own website. So you send an email to johnsebastian.com. Hi, I was wondering if John would be available to come on my late night UK radio show. And then you get an email back saying, yeah, I'd love to. When do you want me? Signed, John, you know. And it's 15-year-old me. I'm, you know, 44 now, but 15-year-old me is geeking out, getting emails from all of these people. I've got all their, you know, all of their vinyl and all of their CDs, and I've seen some of them in concert, you know, and they're corresponding with me. So it's really good. It, from that point of view, it's good. And because it's a late night show, we get longer to talk to these people. You know, we can have them on for half an hour if they're up for it. And I like to think that I don't ask them the obvious questions. You know, I tend to avoid the sort of biggest. I mean, when John Sebastian came on, he was really impressed that I didn't play Summer in the City or Daydream, sure, or something. I played some obscure track off of a solo album he did in 1975, and he was like, whoa, I don't think I've ever even heard that song on the radio. So I like to think that I come at it from a slightly different angle. You know, I only get people on that I like, so I've got a certain amount of knowledge about them already, so I'm not, you know, so I like to think I'm doing things a bit differently in that respect.
I think that's the key thing that stands out for me on the show, and what would normally only be the reserve of podcasts, I guess, is that you do give people a bit more time. Yes. And also, yeah, because it is people that you already know a fair amount about, the questions aren't just, you know, tell us something about the latest album, tell us, you know, facts about that. It's a real deep dive into the back catalogue and some, like you say, coming at it from a completely different angle.
It's and very rarely, we do it occasionally because it's someone we like, But very rarely do we get someone on who's talking about the new album or the new tour or the new book. Occasionally, I mean, we get all of those emails and my producer, Catherine, will go, you interested in this? No. Interested in this? Yes. But generally, it's people that we have reached out to. And I know that they'll have stories. And again, so many people after the shows have got in touch saying, I mean, the obvious example was, I thought Mike Love was a dick from the Beach Boys. But here in the interview, you know, it completely changed my point of view about him. People say, you know, I never bought into the Mike Love was the bad guys. We actually made Mike Love blush on the radio because I'd read his autobiography, which is a great book. And in it, there's a bit about something he taught Dennis Wilson. And I said to him, is it true you taught Dennis Wilson cunnilingus? And you could hear him just, you know, go bright red on the phone. But it was lovely. No one else has ever asked him that question. No one else has ever said that to him. And I did, and he loved it.
He's not going to get that on Steve Wright, for example. Or, you know,
I don't think so, no.
Was it Mike Love that you had a bit of a run-in with at an airport once?
No, that was Al Jardine. Jardine did what I now call Al Jardined me. I'm a huge Beach Boys fan. I mean, Brian is God, and I think Mike is a legend. I love it. And I was at LAX, and it all sounds very glamorous, but it's a terrible airport. And I saw Al Jardine, the rhythm guitarist from the Beach Boys, walk past me, and suddenly my heart started going and my hands got sweaty and I became a 15-year-old fanboy. And I followed him. He went into the toilet. I followed him into the toilet and I was thinking, I've got to say something. And I was trying to think of the song that he did on the 1972 Surf's Up album, and I was trying to remember what the title was. And then he went out and I was thinking, I'm going to go up to him and mention that song, you know. And I mean, it sounds a bit stalkerish. He was going down an escalator, and I followed him down the escalator, and I got to the bottom. He had his back to me, and I said, "Mr. Jardine," and his shoulders went down, his head dropped. I could see the side of his face, and he was like, "Ugh," and what he was saying, but that body language and that noise was, "Oh God, someone wants to talk to me about the fucking Beach Boys." And what I wanted to say thank you, would have liked a picture, would have liked an autograph, but, you know, he turned around, he went, "Yeah." And I was crushed. In that moment, I was crushed. And I just said, "I just wanted to thank you for all of the good music. I'm a big fan." And he went, "Great." And I said, "Have a nice day." And I turned around and I walked away and I was crushed. I was crushed. So now whenever a celebrity is rude to me or anyone else, its official title is being Al Jardined.
Have you managed to speak to him post the escalator incident, or have you tried emailing him?
I've tried to get him on the show and we've had no response. He couldn't have known it was me. I mean, the dream situation would be for him to come into the studio for an interview and I go, "Yeah, what?" I'd love to chat with him, but I was crushed that day, man. Really crushed. Al bloody. Who else is going to recognise Al Jardine? It's not like it happens all the time.
Who's been the biggest surprise that they've got back to you? Who's been the biggest catch, as it were?
That is an excellent question. I'm really surprised we got John Lydon, actually.
Yeah.
John Rotten, a couple of people got in touch and said, "Oh, you should get John Lydon on. You'd be good." And I had read his autobiography and loved it. And I thought, we'll never get John Lydon on. I don't know why I thought that. But we got in touch with his people and they were quite wary. And he had people. It wasn't straight to him. They were quite wary. What is the show like? What time is the show on? Can we have an example of the show? And we sent some clips of the show and I said, "Look, I don't even want to ask him about the Sex Pistols or punk. I'm not even going to mention the P word." I think it was the 40th anniversary of punk or something. Right. So he was getting swamped with that. And I said, I don't want to talk to him about punk because I feel I've heard him. I just want to talk to him about what it's like being John Lydon and what it's like living in LA as John Lydon. I wanted that kind of, and that sort of impressed them. And I was really scared of him, actually. I thought he would be the arsehole that you sometimes see on television.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been further from the truth. He was delightful. He was charming. He was funny. He mentioned the Sex Pistols. I never mentioned them. He mentioned them. And he was just like your kind of rude uncle. You know, he laughed a lot, sounded proper Cockney, but he was really charming and really, really warm. And that surprised me a lot. And again, it was another one of those interviews where people said, I didn't think I'd be interested in him because I've heard him, you know, punk and yeah. McLaren, heard him say that. But he just came across as a really nice bloke, you know. So, he was a surprise.
I guess it's good to try and get these people away from the character, you know, because I think it's so easy for people to, like, they go into an interview situation like that, or, like, you know, like you say, bumping into someone in the airport, they immediately have to fall back into the character that people know them for. And once you move away from that, quite often people are just like normal geezers, you know what I mean? Or normal ladies, and they just want to have a chat about normal things.
Yeah, I think my trick is finding an in, is finding something that is going to get you in. The trick with John Sebastian was playing this obscure song. It was a great song. I can't remember what it was called. But playing this obscure song, that was the in, because it suddenly, I kind of judged that he would be impressed that we weren't playing one of the hits, and it worked. I had Ray Davis on another show from the Kinks, and it was a bit of a nightmare because he brought a load of PR people. And the PR people said, you've got to talk about the new album. You can't talk about the Kinks. Can't talk about the Kinks. I was like, fucking hell. All right. And it was a pre-recorded interview. So he came in and we had this really stilted interview about this new album that wasn't very good. It was Kinks cover versions, bizarrely, but we weren't allowed to talk about the Kinks. Or it was the album he did where he was duetting with people. And then a few minutes into it, we had to stop. There was a problem with the recording. And that was my in. I said, because at the time I lived in Muswell Hill, which is, of course, he was famous for. And I said, do you get back to Muswell Hill much? He said, why are you asking? I said, oh, I live, because it was pre-recorded and we stopped. I went, oh, I live on Muswell Hill Road. And I used to live on Colney Hatch Lane, and I've been there for 15 years and I love it. And I just wondered if you, and he went, oh, right. Yeah. And that was the in, and that was it. As soon as I said that, he was in, and we started talking about pubs, and we started talking about curry houses, and then we got the thumbs up that the interview was okay, was ready to go, that we were ready to record. And as we went back, he said, ask me anything you want. Boom, we're in talking about the Kinks. And that was it. And the trick for me is just finding that in. You know, it was a lucky coincidence. I lived around the corner from where he used to live, you know. Sure. That's not always going to be the case, but it's just the best interviews I've done are where I interviewed Sparks. I'm a huge Sparks fan. I just think they're brilliant. And I wasn't a fan of them until I was offered them, and I kind of went, I'll take a punt on Sparks. I didn't know enough about them, but what little I knew intrigued me, and they came in. And since then, I've just fallen in love with them because they're the most charming men, and God, they're so good, so good. But before we started, I said, if you want, we don't have to mention This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us, the hit. And they're like, really? I said, we can make this the first interview you've ever done where we don't mention that song. And they're like, wow, if you don't mind, that would be really cool because we're sick of talking about it. And we didn't mention it. And I instantly won them over, you know, by asking, I don't even know what I asked, obscure stuff. But it's there's no point in asking the obvious questions, you know. You know the answers. I know the answers. Everyone knows the answers. How did your band get the name? Who cares? Tell me what it's like being a 57-year-old rock star living in LA. That's what I want to know. So that's my trick, you know.
Have you had the Sparks on a few times as well? I seem to remember you talking to them a few times, and it always strikes me when people come back, they always remember that initial interview that you've done with them. And it's a chance to carry on the conversation because you don't just talk about the new album. Yeah. I think that's one of the key components of the interviews that you do, actually.
Thank you. Yeah. And we have had a lot of people that have come back. And what's really nice is we've had a lot of the acts afterwards have got in touch either directly or through the PR saying, I love that. That was the best interview. The number of acts that said that was the best interview they've done in that round of promotion and stuff, you know, is a thrill.
Yeah. The show, obviously, primarily a talk radio show, but you do play a bit of music here and there as well. What's the, for people who haven't listened to the show yet, how would you describe what to expect from the music that you play on the show?
Well, it is mainly the Monkees. you know, it's like 70% the Monkees because I'm obsessed with the Monkees. I started my own record label, 7A Records, to sell Monkees stuff. But if I've if someone sent me something brilliant, or I've discovered something, or I think it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
It's a mood. I'm a really big fan. There's a woman called Imani Coppola who had a hit 20 years ago with Legend of a Cowgirl, and then kind of decided she didn't want to be a pop star, so started releasing sort of slightly weird avant-garde, it's a really lazy description, but it fits, kind of albums on her own. And she's done some brilliant songs, and I love her. I think she's a genius. And when we go to New York next week, hopefully we're going to meet her, and I'm terrified of meeting her. Terrified. So I'm just completely in love with what she does, and she's quite intimidating, you know, and I'm going to go and hang out with her. But so we quite often play some of her stuff, or I play the theme tune to The Fall Guy, which is just a great song, you know. I tell you what I'm looking into. There's this thing called Upload Radio.
I saw that you've been investigating this.
Yeah, because I want to do a music show, and I've done some stuff from Virgin, but I want to do a show where I get to play whatever I want. Not to get a huge audience, just for the ego boost of playing whatever I want, really, and sharing it with people. So I'm looking at this thing called Upload Radio, where you get an hour. You have to pay them £20, but you get an hour, and you can play what you want, and it goes on DAB, and then it goes online, and then I might upload it to Mixcloud, where you can download it. I don't know. I'm looking at doing something like that, because I've got quite an eclectic taste. I've listening to a brilliant... Oh, there's a brilliant box set on Cherry Red Records. Is that what it's called? Cherry Red?
Yeah.
It's 80s British psychedelia. Oh, it's fucking incredible. Some of this stuff I've never heard of. I mean, there's Julian Cope and Doctor and the Medics. But there's just some amazing bands on there. So I'm wigging out to that. And I'd like to share that with people. Wouldn't really be appropriate on the talk radio show. But if I go the way of doing it on Mixcloud and Upload, then I can play it there.
Yeah, I think definitely eclectic is the way to describe the music on the show as it is. And if that was expanded into a full music show, then yeah, that'd be an interesting listen, yeah. I think. You mentioned briefly the record label. How did that all get started?
I'm obsessed with the Monkees, you know, and obsessed is the word. I've spent thousands of pounds buying shit from eBay. I mean, utter rubbish, you know. And I've been to America to see them, and I'm obsessed. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I had this silly idea of releasing all of the Mickey Dolenz solo singles from the 70s on an album. Through complete trial and error and, you know, bashing my head against a brick wall, I found out who owned them, who owned the rights. It was Universal. Ended up emailing someone there, a young lad called Liam, who coincidentally, we found out later, was John Lydon's nephew, I think. and he said, yeah, we own them. Send me an offer for licensing. I didn't have a clue. And at that point, a guy called Glenn got in touch, who said, I've been watching with interest your project. I work in the record industry. How about we set up a record label and we go halves and we try and make this happen? And we did. And it's been relatively easy. We set up 7A Records. It's 7arecords.com or facebook.com/7arecords. And we've released about half a dozen vinyl LPs and CDs, and we've got a Monkees tribute album out now, and we've just done our first Davy Jones release, and we're working with, you know, one of my heroes, Michael Nesmith. We're bringing out it's gorgeous. I've just seen the presentation for it, a picture disc of Nesmith live in Britain in 1975, never been released.
Wow.
He's signed a contract, BBC have signed a contract, and we're bringing that out later in the year, and it makes absolutely no money whatsoever. You know, we're funding it ourselves, but it's kind of now got to the stage where it's sort of funding itself. Not quite, we're still having to dip into our pockets a little bit, but because we kind of give as much as we can, we have like embossed covers and booklets and all of this shit, you know, we could cut back on a lot and make money, but we're just throwing everything at it, and it's just a really nice hobby. And we're making these beautiful records and these beautiful CDs, and you know, it's a joy. So I you know, sometimes I have to phone up Mickey Dolenz and you know, just run something past him, and it's a dream come true. You know, it's the weirdest thing.
That's what I was going to say, actually. You know, how weird would that be for your teenage self to know that you're phoning up the Monkees on a regular basis?
It's insane, man. And I hate phone. Here's the weird thing. I've got his number and I have to phone him up from time to time. And I hate doing it because I get too nervous. And so I get Glenn to do it sometimes. And he's, you know, he's the nicest guy, and Nesmith is the nicest guy. And you know, it's just a thrill, an absolute thrill. And it turns out setting up your own record label, it's not that difficult. And I recommend, if anybody has got an interest in a niche artist or a niche band or someone they think is overlooked and isn't getting the respect they deserve, fucking do it, man. Set up a record label. There'll be templates on how to make, you know, how licensing deals and stuff like that. It's not that if you got not that expensive. I guess our initial outlay, two grand, and we kind of made that back. Now, $2,000, and we were doing it expensively. We were doing it on vinyl, so that instantly put the costs up. And we, you know, we put a booklet in there, a 20-page booklet, that put the costs up. If you're doing it as a CD only, I reckon you could start up a record label with $1,000 and get a CD. And that will include licensing and manufacturing. It costs nothing to manufacture CDs. And you could do it for $1,000. You could get stuff out there. And you would, if you chose wisely and you caught the, you know, there were enough fans, you'd make that $1,000 back and you'd have a thing out there.
I did a little record label about 10 years ago, just putting out like my mate's band's records. And I, like, initially on the first couple of releases, lost quite a lot of money. And then, like, figured out what it was that you needed to do. And I reckon I probably just, like, I packed it in, I guess, maybe 6 years ago. Maybe I did it longer than 10 years ago. Anyway, I did, like, maybe 8 records. And, like, I was like, that's enough. I've looked into it and it was very fun, and that's enough for me. I'll let someone else take over for now. But I was 19. Do you know what I mean? It was just give it a go, see what happens.
And what were you doing? Were you doing records or CDs or downloads or what? What was the thing?
The first record was a 7-inch, and then I did an LP, and then I did a couple of CDs, and then another couple of LPs, and then a couple of 7-inches, I think, finished it off. There or thereabouts. But yeah, I mean, like, jumping in, doing split releases to begin with other people who, like, liked this band that nobody else liked, do you know what I mean, to begin with, and we wanted to get the music out there, and that was great until we realized that when you're putting out a record because nobody else will put out the record, that also probably means that nobody else is going to buy the record. So I've still got loads of those in the loft in my parents' house, but you know, that's fine.
But that's a story, and that's something to show the kids later on, you know, and the grandkids.
Completely, absolutely. And, you know, every now and again, I see one of the people from one of those bands, and I say, I've got all these records. Do you want to take some? And they say no, and I go, okay, cool. Well, do you want to go and get me a pint then? And usually it works out. So,
so but you made something. You actually, you know, and again, if you wanted to just do it as digital downloads, you can do it like for pennies, really.
Completely.
I like the physical thing, and you made a physical thing, and it's a joy when every time we get our stock in and I go and look at the boxes and it's like, fuck, we made that, you know. I'm really proud of it.
How embedded have you had to become in the Monkees fandom forums and stuff like that? Are you kind of king of the Monkees fans now?
Well, the Americans love me because when I go to America and sometimes I talk at the conventions or stuff, I put on my best Hugh Grant voice and so they love that. But I was I was in those groups anyway. You know, I was in the fan groups. Here's the thing. I was a bootlegger. You know, I was bootlegging concerts and bootlegging DVDs and all of this stuff. So people kind of knew me anyway, that, you know, people in America that didn't know me for the TV or radio work. But that once, you know, once we went legit, I had to knock all that stuff on the head. But it's, you know, it's geeky and it's joyful and it doesn't make money. But generally, one release will fund the next one. We're having the time of our lives, you know.
I think geeky kind of aptly sums up a lot of the interactions you have with guests on the show as well, to bring it back to the show. And I think our audience very much, you know, this podcast is about the finer details of guitars a lot of the time. And I think that approach, even on a kind of grander stage that you have, you know, the kind of national broadcasting stage, people appreciate that, you know, really focusing in on the fine details. And again,
we know each other because you have sold me guitars.
We should talk about this. I didn't know whether we were going to cover this, but
yeah, we could talk about this. I have a beautiful red Epiphone Casino, which hardly ever gets played, but looks absolutely beautiful, thanks to you. But my geekiest guitar, and this will be my last Monkees point, I promise, this is a prize collection. There are not many of these. The Monkees were sponsored by Gretsch. And they had all these wonderful Gretsch guitars and Gretsch drums, Vox amps. And so in 1967, you know, because they were selling Monkees tea towels and Monkees pajamas, they thought, I know, let's bring out a Monkees model Gretsch guitar. And they did. And it came out just as it became public that the Monkees didn't play on their records. So they sold zero of these guitars, and every now and then one of them pops up on eBay, and sometimes they're listed for silly money, sometimes they're in really bad condition. But I got one, a 1967 red Monkees Gretsch in full working order. It's battered, but it's in full working order with the scratch plate, and it's got a little head plate as well. And I think I paid, don't tell my wife, I think I paid, it was just shy of $2,000.
Okay.
What? Which is not, you know, in the great scheme of guitars and collectible guitars.
I mean, that's how much a new one costs.
Yeah.
A new Japanese-built Gretsch will cost you that sort of money anyway. So you've
I think you've done well.
You've done pretty well there.
You've won.
On guitars, I've done it. Seriously, don't tell my wife.
You'll have to send us a picture. We've got quite an active Facebook group around the podcast.
Definitely. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, that'd be good. And just to, you're a bit of a bass player as well. And in fact, I assume, do you remember, did you play a Rickenbacker at one point? Is that right?
I had, I haven't played for a while. I've got a gorgeous Fender Jazz.
Okay.
With the neck where it gets thinner, and that's my bass of choice because it's got that the thinner neck at the top, and because it's really light, it's a really light guitar. But I've also got a Rickenbacker, which just looks fucking sexy. You know, it's very sexual guitar.
They're the best looking one.
They're stunning, man. But it weighs an absolute ton, and the neck is like the thickness of my arm. Yeah. You know, it's incredible, but it just look like you know what you're doing, even if you don't know what you're doing, like I don't.
All the style getting you through in those situations. Ian, we should probably wrap up. Just quickly, what guests have you got coming up? Do you know who's coming on the show?
Well, do you know what? That is an excellent question. We're all set because we're off to New York next week. We're meeting loads of New York people. So we've got Steve Guttenberg from the Police Academy films. We've got Imani Coppola. We've got John Ronson. We've got Richard Bacon, bizarrely, because he lives in New York. Yeah, he does. I know, it's weird. We've got Roger McGough from The Scaffold and The Poet. I'm supposed to be meeting him tomorrow, but we've had to postpone that until we get back from New York. Off the top of my head, I think that is... Hang on a minute. I'm about to be told by a grown-up who we've got coming, and she's going to tell me... You can edit this via a computer to make it sound like I know what I'm talking about.
There's no edits in this.
No, we're going out live right now.
Yeah, right.
That's it. Can't remember. No, that's it. That's who we got. So we got some cool people coming up. Yeah.
Good stuff. If you want to remind people where they can hear the show and where they can find you on the internet at large.
If you go to ianlee.com is my website. I'm at Ian Lee on Twitter, and it's IAINLEE. I've got two shows I plug. The radio show is on Talk Radio, and it's on DAB or on the Talk Radio app or talkradio.co.uk, Monday to Friday, 10 o'clock at night. And I also do another show, which we release one a week. It's called The Rabbit Hole, and that's on iTunes or it's on Acast and blah, 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 blah. Follow at Ian Lee, and I'm constantly banging on about them.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.